night doubleheader.
I know, really.
We will go on the record and come to order. The commission is hereby convened in open session, November 16, 2012, to consider the matter entitled Secretary of Labor versus the American Coal Company, docket number Lake 2010-408-R. Present are myself, Chairman Jordan, Commissioner Young, and Commissioner Nakamura. We will start with an overview of the case presented by Rory Smith. Good afternoon, Rory.
Good afternoon. On January 19, 2010, MSHA inspectors Michael Rini and Wendell Crick began a regular inspection of the Glacier Mine Complex. The inspection included a visit to the new future coal stockpile. The stockpile was about 60 feet high and about 1,000 by 300 feet wide. Coal from an underground mine is stored in the stockpile before it is moved to the preparation plant. The inspectors testified that on the day of the inspection, they observed five separate areas of the stockpile where coal was smoldering or smoking. Crick testified that he observed whitish brown smoke and heat waves and a whitish coat of ash around the areas that smoke was rising from. He testified that he smelled a hot coal sulfur smell, which he attributed to burning coal. He also stated that the smell grew stronger when he approached within 5 feet of the smoke. No flames were observed on the day of the inspection. As a result of his observations, Crick verbally issued an order pursuant to Section 103K of the Mine Act, which was later reduced to writing and issued as order number 841-8503. Section 103K provides in pertinent part, in the event of any accident occurring in a coal or other mine, an authorized representative of the Secretary, when present, may issue such orders as he deems appropriate to ensure the safety of any person in the coal or other mine. The order prohibited activities in the stockpile and required the operator to obtain prior approval from an authorized representative for all actions necessary to restore operations to the affected areas. American contested the order, and the case proceeded to a hearing. Parties stipulated that the only issue in dispute was whether a fire occurred in the new stockpile on January 19, 2010. At the conclusion of the hearing, the judge issued a bench decision vacating the order. On September 28, 2010, he issued a written decision. The judge concluded that for the order to be valid, the secretary must prove that an accident pursuant to Section 3K of the Mine Act occurred on January 19. Section 3K states that an accident includes a mine explosion, mine ignition, mine fire, or mine inundation, or injury to, or death of, any person. The judge determined that Sections 3K and 103K of the Act are unambiguous, and that according to basic dictionaries, the term fire plainly requires the presence of a flame. Since the inspectors did not observe a flame in the stockpile on January 19th, the judge concluded that there was no fire and thus no accident. The secretary contends that Section 3K is silent or ambiguous with regard to whether the term fire requires the presence of flames. She alleges that the judge erred in failing to consider all the traditional tools of statutory interpretation, including both particular language at issue, statutory purpose, and the language and design of the statutory scheme as a whole. The Secretary argues that the Commission should defer to her interpretation offered on review, which includes both events marked by flaming combustion and events marked by smoldering combustion that reasonably has potential to burst into flames. The Secretary also alleges that the judge erred in declining to credit the opinion of the inspector because a decision by an inspector alone, if reasonable under the circumstances, must be sufficient to determine whether he is confronting a fire that necessitates the issuance of a Section 103K order to to protect persons present at the mine. American asserts the term fire in Section 3K plainly means that a flame is being produced. It argues that the judge did not err in relying on the dictionary definition of the term to establish plain meaning. American further contends that if the commission should find the term fire ambiguous, the commission should not defer to the secretary's proper interpretation because it is not reasonable.
Thank you, Rory. Commissioner Nakamura is going to lead off the discussion.
Yes, first I'd like to say thanks to Rory for the very helpful decisional memorandum and also your help during the past several weeks when I had questions about the law and the record. So thanks very much. Good job. Well, right off the bat, I would say that I find that the term fire in 3K and as applied to 103K, to be silent as to whether or not there has to be a flame or not in order for there to be a fire, a flame or not, whether it has to be a fire. So on that basis, I would vacate the decision of the judge, which was, and I find that his use of, I guess it was Webster's Dictionary and third edition, third New International Dictionary, and the Random House Dictionary. So certainly not be an adequate analysis of the meaning of the term fire. And I think, as the DM points out, that Section 3K actually defines, sets forth the term mine fire, and it's not just fire. So it seems to me that would provide a clue that you would need to go beyond these two particular dictionary definitions in order to get to the meaning that was intended by Congress. I would cite everyone to a case in the D.C. Circuit called Alarm Industry Communications Committee versus the Federal Communications Commission, at 131 F3rd 1066. It's a 1997 case, and it's a good illustration of where the FCC used Black's Law Dictionary to come up with a definition for entity, which they said was clear, and the D.C. Circuit I think showed that indicated why would you use just one dictionary in order to come up with a definition. And the court there suggested it may be because that's the answer you wanted in the first place. In any event, I find that the term is ambiguous as used in the Mine Act. So the next question for me is whether the Secretary has set forth a reasonable interpretation of the term mine fire. And she says that fire includes both flaming combustion and events marked by smoldering combustion that reasonably has the potential to burst into flames. And let me, as an aside, let me just say that I initially was under the impression, and I think the DM pointed this out, that the Secretary may have set forth a different definition at the trial level. And that concerned me because if she's taking inconsistent positions, it makes me wonder whether or not the Secretary has actually exercised her expertise and consider judgment in determining what fire means. And I think, as we all know, the gold standard for the Secretary interpreting a statute is notice and comment rulemaking. But she has the option of going through adjudication for purposes of it, law, its agency lawmaking, and in this case, interpretation of the word fire. So, to me, you know, the adjudication needs to be full and complete. And if she's taking inconsistent positions at different levels of the adjudication, it seems to me that it may not necessarily be full and complete. But I actually looked at some of the pleadings filed by the secretary before the judge, and I think it's pretty clear from her pretrial brief that although she didn't use the words, I guess, in the actual test, potential to burst into flame, she was talking about the concurring opinion in Phelps Dodge of Commissioners Jordan and Cohen. And in that case, they actually were, the secretary asserted the same meaning for fire that she's proposed here, and that is including combustion that has the reasonable potential to burst into flame. So for that reason, I don't find that there was really any difference in what she posited. So the question for me is whether or not the secretary's interpretation is reasonable, and I find that it is. I think, as the DM points out, it's certainly aligned with the purposes of the act. This is a remedial statute, so it's entitled to broad interpretation. Certainly, if there's a smoldering fire without flame, that's potentially dangerous, both underground and at the surface. A review of the legislative history. There are references to the dangers of smoldering fires. So I find that it is reasonable. The posture of this case, though, given that interpretation and the posture of this case, I would remand it back to the judge. I agree with the secretary as to what the proper focus should be in this case. This involved a 103K order, and the law is clear that the inspector has discretion as to whether or not to issue it. And the secretary sets out the proper focus here as being whether the inspector's issuance of the Section 103K order was reasonable under the circumstances, he observed, in light of the secretary's reasonable interpretation of the term fire. So I think for the issue for the judge is did the inspector act reasonably when he observed, I guess, the smoldering that was occurring? I guess I think there were five places on this particular stockpile, and was it reasonable for him to issue to 103K? And was it reasonable for him to believe, if he believed it, that there was a reasonable potential for the smoldering to burst into flame? I don't think we can decide that here. I think the judge is going to have to take the standard, if the majority is to adopt the standards set forth by the secretary. We'll have to take that and then make some credibility determinations, findings of fact, and probably some credibility determinations on remand.
Thank you, Commissioner Nakamura. Commissioner Young?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd also like to thank Mr. Smith for his very astute analysis on this case and his helpfulness in preparing for us. I have a brief story. I promise it's relevant. When I was in law school, our next-door neighbor the couple next door had a baby girl, and after mom was sufficiently recovered, they threw a huge party, big barbecue, and they rented those drums that you cut in half, the oil drums you cut in half, and you fill them up with charcoal, and they just grilled up a whole bunch of ribs and burgers and hot dogs, and it was great. We had a really nice evening until it started to rain, and when it started to rain, we figured the party was over, and I helped my neighbor, Bob, who took the grills and rolled them over to the garden area that was on the boundary between our houses, and we dumped the ash out into the garden area, and then we hosed it down with a lot of water, and we went inside, and it rained all night. And the next day, it was a nice sunny day. I went to school, and I came back home, and I was eating lunch and studying, and I looked out my kitchen window, and my fence was on fire. And I had to go outside and uncoil a hose and put out the fire and hose down the ash that had gotten up against this wooden fence between our houses. And that's my only firefighting experience. If I hadn't been home, the fence continued on and connected with my garage. I probably would have at least burned my garage down, or if somebody else hadn't noticed it. So fire is a sneaky thing. It's an insidious enemy of miners in all its forms, and I would point out, in agreeing with Commissioner Nakamura, that the ALJ, and I think this is a very astute observation, has made a critical error here in trying to define the term fire when the term of the Mine Act is actually mine fire. As you may be aware, as you probably are aware, having some familiarity dealing with the Mine Act, common sense definitions don't always apply, such that a road may be a mine, and something that may look like a fire for one purpose may require some further thought and observation in order to qualify as a mine fire. Given that prelude, I don't think it's necessary or prudent to adopt the definition formally that the Secretary suggests in this context. It's not necessary because I think this case could be resolved on narrow grounds, and to that extent, I agree with Commissioner Nakamura that it would have to be remanded, and I'll get into that in a minute. I don't think it's prudent because this is a broadly applicable, important definition which has significance in a variety of contexts, which may not all be resolved by the definition the Secretary proposes. To the extent the Secretary makes the same mistake the ALJ makes in trying to define fire instead of mine fire, and the reason we defer to the Secretary, I'm told, is her special expertise in such matters. But instead of putting that expertise to work and examining conditions arising from heat and combustion, where or how they might threaten minor health and safety, she's gone out like some slacker college student and grabbed a paper off the internet. I don't believe this is reasonable in light of the opportunity presented to her by Phelps Dodge Tyrone 4 years ago. This particular definition has prospective application for mine operators who, if they are going to act proactively and progressively to protect their miners from mine fires, need to know with some clarity and certainty when that condition is present. While Mr. Feingold was correct in noting that terms like reasonably are used all the time in litigation, litigation is the least of my concerns here. I think the Secretary should be more focused on this. Under the Mine Act, it's not her job to provide a safe and healthy workplace for miners. It's the operator's job. How do you know the operator is going to do that job every day, whether the Secretary is at the mine that day or not? And I would submit that it starts with clear standards, communication of expectations, and then enforcement when those expectations aren't met. Having said all of that, the ALJ's decision cannot be affirmed. A definition that requires flame, I think, is too clearly constrained to embrace all of the dangerous combustion events in a mine. As I noted, I believe the case has to be remanded, because even if we were to accept the Secretary's definition, and as I've noted, I would not, none of the other conditions were established as a matter of fact. In effect, the judge decided this case as a matter of law, finding that there could be no fire because there was no flame. I believe that decision was legally erroneous and contrary to the protective purposes of the Act. So I think the judge definitely has to be vacated. The case has to be remanded so that the judge can reconsider it. On remand, rather than applying and imposing a definition that the Secretary has given, in my opinion, too little thought to, which is not supported by any public input or research, I would simply direct the judge to consider whether the event was a mine fire in the sense that it created or allowed to continue the types of hazards that Congress intended to direct or address through the definition of mine fire, or the term mine fire under the Act. I would point out, in noting that I think this approach would be preferable, that I'm not sure the Secretary's definition goes far enough. While Commissioner Nakamura has noted the smoldering fires referred to in the legislative history in this case as a danger that must be considered, not every smoldering fire would be considered a mine fire under the Secretary's definition. Only those who reasonably had the potential to burst into flames. Not only is that an imprecise definition, not readily susceptible of interpretation, it doesn't take into account the possibility, in fact the likelihood, that fire will create dangers on its own that have nothing to do with flame. I think you only have to look back to the Aracoma case, in which the smoke generated by the fire created disorientation, caused the miners to become lost and trapped in the mine and fatally injured as a result of the fire. It wasn't the flame that presented the danger to those miners. In the present context, there are a number of things that I could consider arising in this context, if you just change the facts a little bit, that might present a danger from a smoldering fire, whether it had potential to burst into flame or not. For example, Mr. Feingold talked about, and there's evidence considering the possibility that there could be a consumption of the fuel stockpile so that there would be some instability in the pile. Not only could that have been a threat to the dozer operator who was up there, but it could be present a threat through some kind of collapse of hot burning material on other miners in the area, if there were other miners in the area. And again, this is a definition that would be applied beyond this case, and I think it's therefore important to consider facts beyond this case. Beyond that, you could have a smoldering fire that generates prodigious amounts of smoke, which could create visibility, panic, and other hazards. It could present a danger to miners without the possibility of ever bursting into flame. Again, most people killed in fires are killed by smoke inhalation, and that's another danger that ought to be considered. So I think that it's important to think about it in these terms. And the thing that Mr. Feingold correctly pointed out that resonates most strongly with me is that coal is a fuel. That's why they mine it. It is a fuel, and it's burned intentionally. If it is on fire, and this is not an uncommon occurrence through friction, pressure, heat, chemical reactions, and other events, this is a danger that has to be anticipated and responded to as proactively as possible. I don't believe the Secretary's definition fully considers all of that. It does not impose upon the law the full and thoughtful weight of her expertise, and I would therefore not defer to it. And I don't believe it's worthy of deference in this case. So while I do believe it needs to be remanded to the judge to fully consider all of the possible hazards with some instruction to consider whether this event presented a danger to miners and whether or not the operator should have known or should have been aware of that fact through the application of common sense, I think is the issue that we ought to focus on. So rather than arguing about dictionary definitions, I think that the way to expose this through litigation in this particular case is to limit it to the facts of this particular case. And I would remand it to the judge for that consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Young. I would join my colleagues in vacating the judge's decision and remanding it. I find myself in the same view as my colleague Commissioner Nakamura I would remand it with the instruction that the judge make the appropriate factual findings under the standard that the Secretary has indicated that they use to determine whether something is a mine fire. I listened with interest to my colleague Commissioner Young's idea to more or less invite a even broader standard, but I think that whether the Secretary could even have a broader standard for purposes of this case, that wouldn't vitiate the action here if it met the standard that they were proposing here. But I think a remand is appropriate because it's not clear to me, given the nature that the case was tried below, that there were the appropriate factual findings made to determine whether the stockpile had the reasonable likelihood to burst into flame, even though flame wasn't present. It sounded like it did, but I know at argument there seemed to be some contention over, you know, there was a lot of wind and yet it still didn't burst into flame, and I'm not sure that the parties really presented the facts, and that the judge really stopped the matter at just determining whether there was no flame, which was conceded by both parties, so there really wasn't the need to make the appropriate factual findings. So I would feel more comfortable remanding it so that those factual findings could be made. So I think that, on the other hand, I think that it's important that the inspectors are going to be the ones in the field looking at these situations and having to make a determination whether it has the potential to burst into flame. So in a way, it can't be that you have to be a fire expert to be standing there, you know, deciding whether you're going to issue an order to protect the miners. But I think that's the sort of thing that's appropriate for the fact finder to determine in the conditions that were present there that day. So, all right, well, I guess then we have a unanimous decision to vacate and remand. I'm not sure if it'll be one opinion or a concurrence at this point, but I guess we can see how that works out.
So I would draft it adopting the definition as a majority position. I don't think I don't believe I'm going to be on that position, but I think that's clearly a majority here.
Yeah, I think there's a majority to vacate the judge's decision and remand it, and with the ruling that the secretary's proposed, the secretary's interpretation is reasonable, and the judge should make the appropriate findings in light of that. And then, Commissioner Young can decide whether to write separately or.
I'll be interested to see what you have to say,
yeah.
Commissioner. I mean, I'm starting to become more skeptical of the deference doctrine and whether the agency, brings its expertise and considered judgment to bear on some of these questions, or whether it's a litigation position. Although, like I was saying, the litigation position is supposed to be part of this whole agency lawmaking. And the gold standard being notice and comment, where you do get the public input, and are you getting enough of all the different sides when you just litigate the issue? So I'm at least appreciate your arguments.
Just one more plug. When we're talking about the agency's reasoned and considered judgment, this isn't her definition. This is something she found. I don't believe that she's applied that judgment as she might have in coming up with her own definition. for example, you know, I cited to the Aracoma case, there are other cases out there where you can talk about the danger of mine fires. And she has those resources available to her. So it's not just the absence of public comment that bothers me. It's the absence of the application of the talented and knowledgeable staff at the Department of Labor to try and understand what this problem represents and whether this definition is adequate to that purpose.
Rory or Mike, do you have any questions for us at this point for drafting?
I don't have any questions.
Right. I forgot to mention that I would also thank you, Rory, for your helpful memorandum and your help in discussing the case, helping to understand it. Thank you. All right, with that, we will go off the record. Thank you.
I go to Union Station, and then I got the BWI.
Oh, you're taking the train to BWI?
Yeah.
I had never done that.